offering loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. In this program, we go through Swami's discourses, and in this particular season, we're going through the 1991 summer course series. The discourse we've been studying for the past couple of weeks, 3 weeks rather, to be precise, is the discourse that Swami gave on the 30th of May, 1991. The entire series is about the Upanishads, and this particular discourse we are dealing with is on the Taittiriya Upanishad. Before we give you a brief summary of what Swami said in the past couple of weeks, the clips which we have played, and to go further in the discourse, I invite Brother Hari to join all of us. Saram Hari.
Saram Prem.
I think the last week we had a very interesting part in that discourse, and very beautifully it was leading to that. When I was looking at the Padyam with which Swami started the discourse, actually Swami was addressing this very issue,
right,
where he started off by saying that social norms and behaviors have drowned, contentment has disappeared, morality and character and human values are shattered, men have lost their humanness. And I mean, that precisely is the problem, of course, in the modern world. But Swami says the Taittiriya Upanishad and its lessons are very much addressing these issues. That's how Swami started the discourse,
yes,
right? And then, of course, Swami spoke about the five. Before that, of course, Swami spoke about how human life is not complete if one lives only for the sake of earning a living or earning. First of all, Swami said about just eating and living, that will not give satisfaction for the mind, though it gives satisfaction for the body.
Right.
And then Swami said that to do work will give you satisfaction, which is higher than this.
Yeah.
But even that will not suffice, because at some point you'll have to stop and ask yourself, what are you doing? Where are you going? Is what you're doing leading you there? Right? Swami spoke about that. And then, of course, the five fires, the internal fires. That was what Swami spoke about, where he said the Udaragni, which is the fire of the stomach, the Mandagni, the suffering of indigestion arising from overeating, and Kamagni is the craving for desires, and Shokagni is the fire of sorrow, and Badabagni is the fire of intense pain or suffering, or whatever it is. And Swami was saying that these five fires literally inspire you to go through life, you know, either to avoid one or to satisfy one. That is what literally spells your course of life. And in this journey where you're trying to avoid one and gather, cater to one, Swami said you should never forget what is the moral code which you have to follow.
Right. Uh-huh.
And from there, Swami led on to this very important point. In fact, even as Swami started it, Swami said, there is a deep secret which you have to understand. And then Swami spoke about the four types of human beings,
right,
which is a very, very beautiful explanation which Swami gave.
A lot of insights came very insightful, from that particular
right
section, actually, like where Swami distinguishes like four kinds of human beings. And in our experience, it is like almost you could say four different phases of our own existence.
Right.
Like, it cannot, in our, I think like in my experience, it is that we go through different stages of the same expression of who we are as human beings. And at the very bottom of that pyramid would be the animal person, what Swami calls, and Swami says, Jnanena Shunya Pashubi Samana.
Right.
So Swami said that essentially this is just a being that is given to sensual gratification, and that's about the lowest form of existence that you can be as a human being. Not very much higher, but you know, the next level would be somebody who is given to begin with, you know, you could say somebody who is given to, you know, the vices and those kind of pleasures. But very clearly Swami distinguishes the demonic person as somebody who acts purely out of selfishness and with no consideration for anybody else's interest or well-being whatsoever. It's completely devoted to one's own well-being, one's own survival.
Right.
Right. So that kind of person Swami has characterized as a demonic person.
Right.
Next comes the human person, like which as Swami goes on to say is like even if the you know the highest form of existence, like a divine person, is not within your reach, you can at least be a human person. And when we look at what has Swami characterized as a human person, it is a person who always acts keeping the truth and dharma in view, which is essentially the teaching of the Shiksha Valyas. Today we will be discovering ultimately the teaching that went out to the students, right, is that satyam vada dharmam chara, practice the truth and act according to dharma. So these are the two main edicts that come out of, or the memorable part of the Shiksha Vali. And Swami is saying that such a person who lives according to dharma and practices truth in his life, and moreover, loves all with kindness and compassion, performs charity and good deeds, which is the kind of ideal person that Swami holds out in front of each one of us. So that is just a human person.
Right.
You know, it's the kind of person that we should naturally be being born in a, like in a human body as compared to any other kind of existence. But higher than this is what Swami calls as the divine human. Daivam manusha rupena, when God himself appears in human form, he idealizes this kind of being, and it is within reach. It is God being a human being, right? So it is not something that cannot be attained by any person. And Swami says that in such a person, God is always present in the heart. There are divine feelings, and more importantly, all the actions are performed only with the motive to please him. And believing that one's reality is the same Atma that is present in everybody. So these are the characteristics of a divine human. And in some sense is the progression through which we can all go through. And I think more importantly, I think very practically if we see, these are the four modes or the four phases which in various degrees are present in each one of us. And it is the extent to which we foster or nurture one phase, I think that determines, you know, how dear we are to God or how much we are fulfilling Swami's aspirations from each one of us. Yeah.
Exactly. In fact, these four categories that Swami is speaking of, you can see this kind of a variety in each field.
Right.
If you take any field, the medical field,
correct,
or you know, probably the administrative field, the bureaucrats, or you talk of, I mean, anything for that matter, policing, or everywhere you find this kind of you know, variety where people are, you know, genuinely good people are there. There are people who are probably absolutely unattached to their work. They just come and they do, and correct, you know, they just spend their time in between where they're supposed to be in the office. They come and go. And all of this, and of course, when Swami says this part is the demonic, that's the most dangerous, right? Even an animal probably will not go beyond its you know, hunting ground to feed itself.
Correct.
But a demonic person is the most dangerous, and Swami would say that, you know, to have knowledge and to not be grounded in values,
right,
is the most dangerous thing to happen. And I think that's what we're seeing. The other interesting thing is the human and the divine level, which Swami is talking about. So much of emphasis Swami was giving on the role that you play juxtaposed to the people around you, right? And I think nowadays we speak so much about freedom, and we talk about, especially the moment you start entering into the teenage and the young adult period, we're always talking about freedom. And there was somebody who, one of the elders in the ashram, was telling us, we don't realize that when we talk about freedom, we are actually talking about the freedom of the ego,
right?
And that's the most dangerous thing. Talking about freedom is not wrong, but
letting
you're talking,
it loose,
right? You're talking about the freedom of the ego, which is dangerous.
Right.
You're trying to fulfill the aspirations, the unending aspirations of the ego, which is most dangerous.
Correct. In fact, Swami speaks about this exact dichotomy in the Dharmavahini.
Right.
So he says that when present youth and present generation itself speaks of freedom, they're saying it is a freedom to do what you like. You know, it's like, to paraphrase what Swami said in that, it is like when we speak of individual freedom, etc., to be able to say what we want to. None of these are wrong in themselves. But you know, sometimes when we are fighting for what we call as freedom, it is like the freedom for the senses to go completely amok.
Exactly. Right.
You're fighting for that. And Swami very nicely he recognizes that this in fact is enslaving you. And this is a bondage like which you are entering into even without your knowing. And there is a very long way to come out of that kind of bondage. So the freedom is really when you are truly free to be doing what is appropriate, what is necessary to be done. And that is what Swami has been calling as culture, Sanskriti, right? Refinement. No, what is appropriate to that particular situation? So, do we have that kind of freedom? Is what we must look at.
Right. In fact, whenever Swami is speaking about freedom and the national freedom struggle, Swami would emphasize on some of these words like Swarajya. Swami would say that freedom is when you take control over yourself. You know, when you say Swarajya, Swami says Swa stands for the divine self.
Mm.
When the divine self takes control over it, which means you could be put in any constraint, but you are not. Your happiness does not depend on letting free or having the barriers removed, because you are in total control. It's almost like I always give this example of when you learn to drive a car. I mean, the art of driving a car is when you take it into the traffic and you're able to drive it without any damage to yourself and the people around you.
Mm.
Right? Which means you have learnt driving a car.
Mm.
It's not about you going into the road and saying, I will drive wherever I want.
Yes.
I will turn whenever I want.
Yeah.
The ability to follow those rules and to have a smooth journey and have everybody around you have a smooth journey. And I think that's what Swami is mentioning when he speaks about the human nature and the divine nature.
Yes. We had this exact kind of discussion, a couple of months back. One relative of mine, she had this problem with her teenage son. Not even teenage, I mean grown up.
Mm-hmm.
So they had just performed puja at home, and her son like found the whole thing, like very weird.
Mm-hmm.
They live in the United States. They're of course of Indian origin. But his gripe about it was like, what do all these rituals mean? Is it something that the priest is trying to, he is trying to extract money out of us, by performing all these pujas. And that's the way he saw it. And not only did he see it, he expressed as much to the priest. And that's what my relative, she was very, very upset about that. And she was telling me, why don't you talk to him? So I asked him, whatever your feelings are, why did you feel the need to go tell the priest as much? So he said, see, that is what was on my mind. I wanted to express it. I wanted to say it. And I asked him, now that you're working, would you be doing precisely the same thing? Do you go tell your colleagues and your boss, whatever is on your mind, or would you play it safe?
Mm.
Then he began to realize, that it's not everywhere that he's expressing himself fully.
Mm.
This is some place he felt that the person would not retaliate or whatever it is. He thought and there would be no consequences to him. And he felt like it's completely safe to go and hurt that person if need be.
Mm.
Right? So we are actually, in that sense, we are not true to ourselves to the ideal of freedom that we create. Right? And then he began to see, and I began to tell him, this is what, when Swami says that, or the scriptures say that, you should speak the truth and you do not speak the unpleasant truth. And if you have to, you have to find a way of, Swami used to say, call it the knack.
Right,
of saying it in a palatable manner, even if you have to.
Right.
there was absolutely no need to go and speak out to that person if your mother has got what she wanted out of that ritual, and that's all it matters.
Right. I mean, the achievement in any field is like that, where there is a given set of constraints and how you're able to go in and excel within that. I mean, everything, gymnastics is like that, a sport is like that, you have rules and regulations, and how are you able to excel within that thing? It's not about you going and, hitting the ball or the cock all over the place. It's about you going there and playing the game within the rules which are given.
Exactly.
And it's the same with life too. And, and we're talking about Siksha Vali, we're talking about Satya and Dharma, what Swami was telling is the basis of the human life. It's almost like in the student phase you're given, the ground rules are given to you and you're allowed to go into the world and fend for yourself.
Correct.
But I think that's when this problem comes, what you're talking about, how do you tell the truth but not hurt a person?
Yeah.
That comes only with practice. That comes only when you are in the situation.
Exactly.
And that comes, you will be bang on every time, as Swami says, if you follow the master. If you every time are able to turn to the conscience and listen to the conscience. And I think that's where the journey from probably the human life to that divine life comes.
Mm.
Because Swami says when you start acknowledging this divinity within you and within everybody else, and start following the same things. Because what Swami says about the human and the divine is not much difference, except for the fact that you recognize the divinity within.
Yes. In fact, because the Indian system of philosophy, in the Indian system of yoga, one of the most important components is dhamma, the control.
Right.
Right. Which is something we would hate to acknowledge that it is part of one's growth, but then it is present, like the out of their intuition, out of their wisdom, very clearly they have pointed out. In fact, in the Shikshavaliyas, soon we'll be seeing in the discussion that will ensue, that is one of the primary features, one of the teachings that is given by the guru to the students.
Right. So I think we'll go to the next clip.
Yeah.
This is the fourth clip in that discourse. Let's see what Swami is saying in this clip.
కనుక పశుత్తమనగా మానవుడిగా ఉండి పశు ప్రవర్తన ఎందు పశుగుణములు ఎందు జీవితమును అంకితం గావించుకోవటం.
The animal nature meant living as a human being, spending all the time like that of an animal and ending the life like that.
మానవుడు శ్రేష్టమైనటువంటి యొక్క దైవత్వాన్ని అయినా పొందటం సరైన ఉత్తమ మార్గం.
The noblest thing is that man should attain the divinity.
అట్టి దైవత్వాన్ని పొందుటకు సాధ్యము కానప్పుడు మానవుడు మానవత్వాన్ని కూడా పొంది జీవితాన్ని సార్థకం గావించుకోవటం ఇది ఒక ధర్యము.
ఇఫ్ ఇస్ నాట్ పాసిబుల్ ఫర్ హిమ్ టు అటైన్ ద డివినిటీ, అట్లీస్ట్ హీ షుడ్ స్పెండ్ ద లైఫ్ లైక్ దట్ ఆఫ్
మానవుడు. దానవుడు గను పశువు గను మారటము ఇది మహావిరుద్ధమైనటువంటి యొక్క ధర్మము.
మ్యాన్ షుడ్ నెవర్ బి ఎ డెమన్, మ్యాన్ షుడ్ నెవర్ బి ఎన్ యానిమల్, దట్ ఇస్ క్వైట్ కాంట్రడిక్టరీ టు హిస్ లైఫ్.
ఈ విధమైనటువంటి చర్యలు ఈనాడు జగత్తునందు వ్యాపించిపోవటం చేతనే మానవత్వం అనేటువంటిది మరుగు పడిపోతుంటుండాలి.
Because of such actions which are widespread in the world, the human quality disappeared totally.
Neeti nijayiti re shunyamai poyinavi.
The morality and moral conduct,
sangha maryadalu antakante nirmoolamai poyinavi.
The social courtesies disappeared.
Sangham ante emito taru artham chesukolenatuvanti paristhiti endu jeevitanni vyaktham gavinchukuntunnadu.
He is spoiling his life because he has no idea of what society is.
Sanghamanaga kevalam talalu yokka cherike sanghamuga bhavistunnadu.
He thinks that society meant merely collection of heads.
కాదు కాదు, సంఘమనగా అనేకత్వంలో ఉన్నటువంటి ఏకత్వాన్ని గుర్తింపజేసేటువంటిది సంఘము.
సొసైటీ మీన్స్ ద రియలైజేషన్ ఆఫ్ యూనిటీ ఇన్ డైవర్సిటీ.
అందరూ కలిసి ఏక భావము ఏక కర్మను ఆచరించి ఆ కర్మల యొక్క ఫలితమును ఏకాత్మగా భావించి అందరూ అనుభవించుకోవటమే సంఘం యొక్క ప్రధాన ధర్మము.
ద మెయిన్ రైచువస్నెస్ ఇన్ సొసైటీ లైజ్ ఇన్ థింకింగ్ వన్నెస్ in thought and oneness in action.
మానవుని యొక్క నిజమైనటువంటి సుఖము సంఘం ద్వారానే అనుభవించడానికి వీలవుతుందనే సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించడమే సంఘం యొక్క అంతరార్థము.
He should realize the basic fact that he has got all the happiness through society only.
సంఘమే లేకుండినా తానే లేడు.
Without society he doesn't exist.
తన సుఖ సంతోషములు అన్ని కూడాను సమాజంపైనే ఆధారపడి ఉంటుండాలి.
His happiness and pleasure are based on society.
ఈ సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించుకోలేనటువంటి వ్యక్తి మాత్రమే తన స్వార్థము స్వప్రయోజనములకు మాత్రమే ప్రయత్నపూర్వకంగా పాటుపడతాడు.
ద వన్ హూ రియలైజెస్ దిస్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ దెన్ ఓన్లీ హీ విల్ మేక్ ఆల్ ద ఎఫర్ట్ ఫర్ సెల్ఫిష్నెస్.
కనుక తైత్తిరీయోపనిషత్తు ఈ పంచాగ్నుల యొక్క ప్రమాణమును,
దేర్ఫోర్ తైత్తిరీయోపనిషత్
నాలుగు తరగతుల యొక్క మానవులను,
ద ఫోర్ కేటగిరీస్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమన్
చక్కగా వివరించి
ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్ క్లియర్లీ.
విద్యార్థులు గురుకులం నందు తన యొక్క విద్యను అభ్యసింపజేసుకుని,
స్టూడెంట్స్ షుడ్ లెర్న్ ఇన్ గురుకుల,
విద్యను పూర్తి గావించుకుని,
హావింగ్ కంప్లీటెడ్ దర్ స్టడీ,
గృహస్థాశ్రమంలో ప్రవేశించేటువంటి సమయమునందు,
వైల్ ఎంటరింగ్ ఇన్ టు దాట్ స్టేట్ ఆఫ్ హౌస్ హోల్డర్,
పిల్లలను అధ్యాపకులు చెంతజేర్చుకుని,
ద టీచర్స్ కలెక్ట్ స్టూడెంట్స్,
వారు భవిష్యత్తులో ఏ విధమైన జీవితాన్ని గడపవాలని వారికి సందేశ ఉపదేశములు గావించినటువంటిది ఈ తైత్తిరీయోపనిషత్తు.
తైత్తిరీయోపనిషత్తు కంటెన్స్ ది ఎసెన్స్ taught by the teachers to the students, the way how they should lead their life in society.
Indulo preyo margam ani okati shreyo margam ani okati.
There are two parts here. One is preyo marga, other is shreyo marga.
Preyo margam anaga kevalamu appadikappadiki aanandanni andinchetuvanti yokka indriyamuni yokka phalitam.
Preyo marga refers to the pleasure you get then and there of out of senses.
ఇవి తాత్కాలికమైనటువంటి సుఖములు.
దే ఆర్ టెంపరీ ప్లెజర్స్.
ఇవి అనిత్యములు అసత్యములు అనేటువంటివి.
దే ఆర్ అటర్లీ ఫాల్స్ అండ్ ఎఫిమరల్.
ఇట్టి ప్రేయో మార్గమునే ప్రజలు అనేక మంది ఆశిస్తూ ఉంటారు.
మెనీ పీపుల్ ఎస్పైర్ టు ట్రెడ్ అలాంగ్ దిస్ ప్రేయో మార్గ.
కానీ నిత్య సత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క శ్రేయోమార్గమును అనేక మంది ఆశించటం లేదు.
మెనీ పీపుల్ డోంట్ డిజైర్ ద శ్రేయోమార్గ విచ్ ఇస్ పర్మనెంట్.
కారణమేమనగా ఇవి కొంతకాలము తీసుకుంటుంటాయి.
రీజన్ ఈస్ ఇట్ టేక్స్ లాంగ్ టైమ్.
మానవ యొక్క జీవితము అంత ఆలస్యంగా జీవించడానికి తాను అంగీకరించడు.
హీ డజన్ వాంట్ టు వేస్ట్ హిస్ టైమ్ డ్యూరింగ్ హిస్ లైఫ్ టైమ్.
మానవుడు అన్నింటి ఎందుకును వేగం చాలా అధికంగా ఉంటుంటాది. వేగం,
దేర్ ఇస్ స్పీడ్ ఇన్ హ్యూమన్ లైఫ్.
అన్నింటికును పరుగులు ఇడుతుంటాడు మానవుడు.
He runs every moment for everything.
ఆశించేటువంటి ఆశలు ఎందుకును తనకు అనుకూలమైనటువంటి ఆశలను మాత్రమే దృష్టి అందించుకుంటుంటాడు.
Among all the desires, he takes into consideration those which are convenient to him.
మంచి పదవులు,
గుడ్ వర్డ్స్,
మంచి పేరు,
గుడ్ నేమ్,
మంచి ప్రతిష్టలు,
రెప్యూట్,
మంచి యొక్క జీవితము,
ద గుడ్ లైఫ్
కావాలని కోరుతుంటాడు.
He aspires for those things.
కానీ మంచి జ్ఞానము,
గుడ్ విజ్డమ్,
మంచి నడత,
గుడ్ బిహేవియర్,
మంచి బుద్ధులు,
గుడ్
కావాలని ఆశించడు.
He doesn't expect them.
ఇవి మంచి గుణములు, మంచి నడతలు, మంచి ప్రవర్తన, మంచి జ్ఞానము ఆశించేటువంటిదే ఈ శ్రేయో మార్గము.
The Shreya Marga comprises good qualities, good behavior and good
wisdom. అప్పటికప్పటికి పదవులను, గౌరవములను, కేవలము కొన్ని కీర్తులను ఆశించేటువంటిది శ్రేయో మార్గము.
శ్రేయో మార్గ కన్ఫర్స్ ఆల్ ద బ్లెస్ టు ద పొజిషన్ అండ్ ద రెస్పెక్ట్ అండ్ రెప్యూట్ టెంపరర్లీ.
So that was the next clip where Swami is talking, continuing from that concept of the demonic human and the animal human. And Swami is saying, starting by saying that having acquired the human birth, the noblest path and the natural progression is towards the state of divinity. Right? If divinity remains beyond one's reach, acquiring human values and maintaining one's stature as a human is a matter of blessedness also. So Swami is saying both, you know, having been born a human being, you progress towards the divinity. Hmm. But at the same time, in the current stage, even to remain in that human level is a sign of blessedness.
Right, right. Hmm. Yeah. The kind of environment that we today live in, it is kind of, you know, in some ways, it is... not, it may not be fostering. See, the whole society, the education system, as we've been observing from time to time, like, it is geared towards having people grab for whatever is possible. So in a sense, we are teaching the younger generation precisely these kind of values, that you live for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it is a sign of weakness that you feel compassion towards others.
Right.
And you know, something inherently wrong in like being you know, compassionate in that sense. If like today the discussion is a lot about how the American healthcare system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it is now again, it is seeing another upheaval,
right?
After seeing maybe a positive upheaval a couple of years, a few years back, and it primarily comes down to this: how much do we care for those people who are underprivileged? Right? Would we want them to survive, and would we like to sacrifice a little bit of our pleasures and what possibly we call as what we have earned for ourselves? And would we like to give some of it for them to be able to survive, for them to be able to fend off? Or do you call them like people who are mooching off your money,
right?
And, you know, characterize them that way, and in a sense, like, you know, don't stand for them, like each man to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a kind of society where it is you or I. You know, it's not you and I who can coexist. Because even as Gandhiji very wisely, he said, this world has enough for what we need, but not enough for what we want.
Right.
Right. So that is the kind of society that we presently exist in. And I wouldn't blame if, you know, people tend to move towards the demonic kind of living if that is what they believe, that it we need to be that way in order to survive.
Right.
And it takes a lot of such beautiful spiritual instruction to have people wean away towards that and appreciate the beauty of giving, the beauty of, you know, living life where you care for yourself but also care for the people around you.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, interestingly, you know, it's a contradiction that we are living in an age where we can clearly see the forces
right.
being more social in the sense of anything that we do in the economic field or, I mean, environmentally. What a small group does seems to affect a larger part of the population. Mm. We see that, you know, probably hundreds of thousands, I mean, thousands of years ago, it wouldn't have been as apparent, right, you know, when these Upanishads are talking about. Probably the community would have been a small village, probably a small city or even a kingdom. But now we really see a global impact of everything that we do. And in fact, I think in one of the discourses where Swami is talking about healthcare, Swami is saying that most of the time the poor suffer for the development which the rich enjoy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a duty of yours to ensure that they get health care, right? It's no more because, you know, you have had an unhealthy lifestyle, so you're getting the problem. Because even the doctors say that most of the health problems nowadays are because of, you know, lifestyle changes, which sometimes the poor are being forced to embrace.
Right.
You have literally, you know, in multiple levels, it's about pollution in one level.
Yeah.
The other way is industrialization. The marketing has gone so much up.
Correct.
And, you know, you're literally pushing material into their hands, which probably they're not ready for already.
Yeah.
And all of this is leading to that healthcare crisis which we are having.
Yeah.
And then to say that, why should I pay for somebody else's health?
Because the poor have it difficult in so many ways. Even just to concentrate on just nutrition, for example. So, oftentimes in the US they say, you know, it is the people who are poor. You notice that these are the people who are eating the burgers and the steaks on a regular basis. And you would think that, what do you mean? Are they lacking for money? You know, that they have to... how would they be lacking for money if this is the kind of food they're eating, fast food, every single day? But then you begin to realize that nutritious food is actually pretty expensive.
Right.
Right. And even in this age where you have like a fad for everything, like superfoods, like a classic example would be the food called quinoa. It's called a superfood and it's like a fad right now where a lot of people like to consume it. When you read about it, you realize that quinoa is actually, it is a staple food in the Latin American, especially in Mexico.
Okay.
And since it was a staple food, it was obviously like quite cheaply available. But now that it has become something that is marketed all around the world, and many of the privileged people are, you know, buying it in huge quantities. Mm-hmm. The price has gone up so much that it is beyond the reach of the people for whom it was a staple diet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In that way, in so many different ways, it is the poor people who are getting the raw end of all such, developments.
Right.
And it is very difficult for us to gauge that. You know, even like, how much ever we say we are middle class, and it's a totally different kind of life which we get sensitized to because Swami sends us out on the Grama Seva.
Right.
That's when we can stand in the shoes for some time and see how difficult it is for them to get out of that cycle. Imagine in India that somebody who is living out there in the village, their access to education which would have them climb out of that kind of financial status where they are, it is not present at all, that kind of infrastructure. And even now the quality education is so expensive that I can, you know, maybe two generations ago we see so many people who were born poor, but out of, you know, their intellectual abilities, they were able to get good education, access to good education, and within one or two generations, their family is prosperous. But the chances of that happening now, it's nearly nil.
And we have, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, you know, if you look at all those people who literally risen from being from families which have been denied education for generations, or have not taken to education for generations, most of them, I mean, if you see the previous generation, they came from the public school system.
Exactly.
Which is in shambles right now. And I think even a couple of days back, I was listening to a talk which Professor Venkatraman had given. In that, he says that it all started with this concept of for-profit schooling when it came.
Hmm.
He said, because it was never there in education. Yeah. Education was always meant to be given, to be given free, and people who were involved in that sector were supposed to be selfless, thinking about a society which is enlightened. But the moment you say profit and not profit or not for profit, I mean, that's where you are literally, you know, sieving talent away. And at some point, even good talent will want to earn more.
Correct.
And that's exactly what's happened. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Because finally now, you know, that's in the Prema Vahini, Swami is actually speaking about, he's speaking about all the human values, because love is the basis of all the human values. And Swami is talking about how if we practice this kind of human values and what are the benefits we'll get. But at some point in the very first chapter, Swami pauses and actually in kind of has us introspect that whether these values make sense in this modern day life, you know, whether they are even relevant to us. And Swami says that when I speak of these values, I'm also speaking about a society that respects such values, right, which would nurture such values. And we are moving further and further away from that ideal. So it's very, very necessary for us to look back at what the wise people have had to say, because right, have we deviated so much that we will never be able to make a, you know, return. Because here also, I was just reading like what Swami just spoke about what society is. And Swami says that society is not just a collection of people, but society is that which promotes the awareness of unity in diversity. One of the highest ideals that we can aspire to. And contrast it with our regular understanding of what society is, what a social contract is. So social contract is simply a very simple, naive way of saying it is that when we come together to live as a society, we tacitly, what we do is we give up some of our rights.
Right.
And that giving up is a trade-off, because then we have the other rights, like what we consider as important to us, those are protected. And that is the classic understanding of what society is. But we know how Swami always says that do not have your view on what your rights are. Instead, have a look at what your responsibilities are, what your dharma is. And now when we, you know, move to that, swivel to that point of view from what dharma is, and Swami says that we have to look at what the dharma of a society is. What as a society, when we are together, what is it that the society is supposed to experience, or what is it moving towards? And Swami says that there is the significance of society is to teach people that true happiness is available only through collective welfare. It is only when we can carry our sisters and brothers with us, and that is when we truly experience what happiness is. Presently, what we have is a very ephemeral view of what happiness is, self-seeking.
Right.
We seek pleasure and happiness only for ourselves, even if it be at the cost of our fellow human beings. And Swami is bringing the focus back to what an ideal society is meant to do. An ideal society is what it is meant to do is to have the individuals in that experience the true joy of having them being happy and the people around them happy. And Swami said, "Kalisi melisi perugudam." You know, in everything that Swami would teach us, students, devotees, is that it has to happen for all of us.
Right. In fact, you know, a classic example which some of the elders would say in the past in villages and all that, they would have only one provision shop.
Right.
You know, typically, even in Puttaparthi, Swami's father used to run a provision shop, they used to say.
Mm.
That's where all the devotees used to get their needs satisfied. So earlier, every village used to have one person like that, and he would typically be the businessman of the village, and he would have it. And they would say that almost all families will buy only once a month, unless there is some festival or, you know, some need, like someone is pregnant or something like that. So otherwise, all of them will buy only once a month. And if you come to the shop more than once a month, the shopkeeper will ask you, why are you coming more often?
So,
he said, "I mean, you're not. You'll have to fix your budget. You're not living the right way. You're coming too often to shop.
Right.
You'll have to check your expenses."
Mm.
I mean, the shopkeeper who benefits by you coming more often to him, he would say that this is not right.
Yes.
You'll have to check your ways, especially if it's a younger couple or a younger family.
Mm. Mm.
And you know, that's the kind of understanding, because it's both ways. One is that he knows that everybody in the village should be happy, and he also knows that only when everybody is financially sound,
right,
he's going to have a long-term benefit out of it.
Correct.
Right, and I think that is what is lacking. I mean, even now we live as a society. It's not like all of us are by our own. I mean, we all are indeed living in cities and towns, and we follow the traffic. at least to an extent in India, we can't say that too loud and too confidently, but still, I mean, to a fair extent, we do follow a lot of rules.
Right.
But I think what Swami is saying is when individually we lose that sense of selflessness, I think even the society starts reflecting that. And I think we see that in the international level, you know, when nations start behaving selfishly, right? When a nation wants to promote some business interests of its companies, I mean, it gives the company all the rights to go and plunder another nation which is poor or something like that. And what we are doing as individuals, that selfishness is reflecting in bigger corporations, in bigger countries. And I mean, that disparity is so obvious now, right? It's scary in a sense, because I don't think any country says that, you know what, I need to further my business interests, but you're a small country, I'll take care of you also, you also need these things.
Exactly.
You know, I don't want to exploit you like this. I don't think any country literally thinks like that.
Yeah.
I mean, every country gets into a bilateral agreement only to see what is there for me to take from it.
Correct. It's like an accepted canon, you know, like it's like something that we cannot even, like, you know, to even to imagine that if we could drop that one need. Right, it's like it's a kind of thinking, right? That I can live only at the cost of the others, or not even animals. It's like a very reptilian kind of existence, right? But still, you know, if from time to time, like the wisdom from that we gain from sages, saints, and of course Bhagwan, if you can pay heed to that, because it is definitely not intuitive. Right, it takes a lot of evidence to show, like, you know, that
to swim against the tide, actually.
Yeah, a society. Yes, exactly. You to swim against the tide. A society that cares for everybody is a society that is, you know, that lives happily and without much needing much for itself. And that is why at the end, you know, at the end of the entire teaching in the Shikshavali, it is the students are gathered around the guru, and these are the guru's final instructions. So the guru goes through all the rules of grammar. It's like revising what they've done over several decades perhaps, and going through all that. Now the sum and substance is delivered at the end of the Shikshavali. It is very, very vital for all of us to study, and it is highlighted that by the fact that the students of Bhagwan's university, at the convocation, they would chant this particular mantra, right, which is the culminating section of the Shikshavali. And that is what Swami is alluding to over here when he says that, like, this is what the teacher would leave the students with, right? And Swami says, when the student completed their education in Gurukula, before entering the householder stage of life, these were his final instructions on how to lead fulfilling lives. And that is very important. He didn't say a life of denial.
Right.
You know, it is not a life where you shun happiness and prosperity. It is nothing like that. As we can see very in a short while, what do those mantras convey? It will become very clear to us. And the first thing it says is Satyam Vada Dharmam Chara. So it's the duty of every student is to practice the truth and to follow dharma. Now, what is dharma is something, if we read the dharma vahini, we will get a lot of clarity. And just to read very quickly what Swami defines as dharma. And Swami says, first thing is be careful not to offend propriety or the canons of nature, as some time ago. And this is something that if we read, like, Swami's interactions with students, with devotees, this is something that comes out. Like, what is the appropriate behavior? What is, you know, where you do not, good nature, canons of good nature. Like, what a true human being is. The human, a person who practices human values. How should such a person behave? Do not play false to the promptings of the inner voice. And be prepared at all times to respect the dictates of the conscience, and which is something we tend to ignore and drown out. Watch your step to see if you are not in anybody else's way. So constantly you have to be aware that, you know, where am I going? Am I obstructing somebody else's happiness, so to speak? and be vigilant to discover the truth behind all variety. And Swami, in fact, in the Dharmavani, he says that in fact all of dharma, the whole idea of practicing dharma is finally to recognize the truth that is there in this multifarious universe. And Swami says that that is exactly the dharma of a society.
Society itself, right.
Society itself. And so the final instructions to the student, satyam vada dharmam chara, and satyanna pramaditavyam dharmanna pramaditavyam. Do not swerve from the path of truth and dharma. Like, because one can almost imagine the students, they come out with that idealism of youth. And so it penetrates very easily. Yes, speak the truth and practice dharma. But very soon a cynical society is going to drop them down. You know, present them like it is either happiness or truth and dharma. Take a choice, make a choice.
Right.
Right. And that is why it is the Shikshavali is very, very, it has anticipated this scenario, and it tells them as a precaution, do not swerve from this path. Once you are on to that, it is important to remain on that path. Then kushalanna pramaditavyam bhutyena pramaditavyam. This is very important. That in the path of dharma it says, do not neglect your personal welfare.
Right.
Very important, very balanced view. Do not even neglect your own prosperity. It is not at the cost of your prosperity, not at the cost of your happiness. So it is a very fine path to be tread. And the whole time it emphasizes swadhyaya pravachanabhyan na pramaditavyam, the study and the teaching of Vedas. Not only you absorb that knowledge, but you also should be happy to share
it with
that knowledge with others. And that is, in that sharing is when it truly crystallizes for you too. You know, many times when we are given this opportunity to speak in the satsang hall or to speak to devotees in general, I always realize that I am indebted to that audience, because we are asked to give the topic on which we'll talk perhaps a week before, and the moment we have given that topic, we have committed to that, but our mind starts churning like, what has Swami said about that? In my experience, like, how have I seen, what are the experiences that I have witnessed or I have experienced, in it Swami reinforces this particular ideal, right? And then you begin to see in your own life, you know, in that 1 week, your senses are heightened. You know, am I living close to that ideal? Right? It's a very beautiful experience to go through. And which is why, it emphasizes that swadhyaya pravachanabhyan na pramaditavyam, that sharing of the knowledge that you have gained. Right? That is very, very vital. And to continue, again, Matra Devo Bhava, Pitru Devo Bhava, Acharya Devo Bhava, Atiti Devo Bhava, like, hold these people as God, your father, mother, the teacher, who has instructed you, and the relatives who come to your house, who are your guests, right? So these are the edicts that the teacher instructs them. Like, Deva Pitra Karya Abhyan Na Pramaditavyam. That is your duties to the deities, your duties to the ancestors. And also there's a beautiful section, Prem, in which it talks about giving.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is one to give, charity or a gift to someone, especially say to the teacher who has instructed you, right? And the instruction is that you give with faith.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You give that with faith. And according to your strength, need not exceed your financial capabilities. Give a gift according to your strength, with modesty. And it also says with fear. Trying to relate to that, and I remember reading that in the Japanese tradition, when they give a gift, like, they say, we hope that this gift is equal to you. It's a tradition, a custom, mm-hmm. But the way it is said, it is as if like a very fearful, a hopeful mm-hmm. that this gift will, actually please you, and or we are fearful that it may not. It's mm-hmm. a kind of tradition that, but as seeing how beautifully it is mirrored mm-hmm. in the Shikshavali. And of course it's sympathy in the sense that with an understanding of what the kind of circumstance, perhaps if it is charity, the kind of circumstance in which that person is living mm-hmm. presently, with sympathy towards that.
Right. Right. I think even before Swami comes to that, he was talking about these two concepts which are Swami has spoken about many, many times.
Right.
And I think which is central to that idea which you were talking about, where you say that, these are the rules, but you start following it, you have this choice which comes between doing the right and doing the pleasant.
Yeah.
Swami said, the Shreyas and the Priyas.
Yeah.
And in fact, Shreyas, I think the word itself means the ultimate welfare.
Right. Right?
It's not that Shreyas means failure and Priyas means the pleasant. It's just that this is a short-term benefit and that's the long-term benefit.
Exactly.
And Swami said most of the whole problem comes with man's inability to be patient and wait for the benefit. Because Swami never says that you're going to be a loser if you take this.
Mm.
You're going to be the winner in the long run, but do you have the patience to give up small benefits and wait for the ultimate benefit?
Yes. When it comes to God, I think like in Swami's devotees can relate to this best, that there's a long waiting time.
Right.
I remember like coming to darshan as either as a devotee or as a student, there is no such thing as like being instantly in Bhagwan's presence.
Right.
That was perhaps reserved to a very fortunate few. So most of us, we had to, as devotees, I remember 3:30 in the morning we would wake up, go sit in the token lines, and then it was a long wait of 2.5 hours before Bhagwan would grant darshan. Right, and any event that was associated with Bhagwan, there was a large amount of waiting, aspiring for his presence. It was not given to you that easily, even if he was physically available a few steps away from you. Right? There's a lot of prayer involved, a lot of anticipation involved in the whole process.
The beauty of it is, when talking about those four categories that Swami spoke about, I think as Swami's devotees or even anybody who has been exposed to literature such as this, I think it becomes very, very important for us to, if not move towards the divine, I mean, we have no excuse not to,
right,
but at least to remain in the human level, because, you know, in many ways, the darshan example which you gave was a simple thing. In hostel, I remember, I mean, that was a time in the 2000s, Swami spoke on many discourses on Shreyas and Priyas.
Mm.
And especially, I think, the 2000 summer course, Swami had spoken extensively about that. You know, we used to say that, you know, Sunday mornings, interestingly, when you're in Parthi hostel, you wake up earlier than any of the other days.
Yes.
Because that's the day you come for morning darshan, right? And there would always be this problem of whether you go for breakfast or you go for the line.
Right.
Because, I mean, given that Saturday nights is the only day we would all work in the department, you know, the Xerox department or the binding department or whatever, and invariably we'll be late. So morning you'll have to make a choice. And I've heard this many, many times within the students. They say, no, let me choose Shreyas over prayers today. And, you know, so much it was inbuilt into us that this is pleasant, you know, the breakfast is, of course, a hot breakfast early in the morning at 5:30 is always inviting, but no, let me choose this because I want to, you know, go and have Swami's darshan.
Beautiful.
And I think it's there in each one of us, as you're saying, that darshan is one example which all devotees can relate to. And as devotees, we will go through this. We probably have to just imagine that end of the road, Swami is standing there waiting to applaud you and smile and say that, Bangaru, what you did was right.
Yes.
And for us always it's that choice between benefiting now or struggling right now, and at the end of the road meet Swami and receive that smile and Swami saying, I'm happy with you, you've done the right thing.
Yes. It's very important to cognize, therefore, like what is important to us, Prem, at the end of the day. Like as Swami's devotees also we have to really tell ourselves. I remember this, quoting this incident earlier also, but very nice experience I had, and there was some instruction that I had sought from Bhagwan. I think it related to a personal issue, but so the system was that we would wait outside Swami's residence, and Brother Satyajit, who was a personal attendant of Bhagwan, he would come out, and you had to say that, you know, this is the thing, I need Swami's instructions on a personal problem, and he would say, okay, I'll take this letter, hand it over to Bhagwan, and every now and then Swami would read the letter immediately and then give his guidance. So in this case I was very fortunate that as I was waiting outside, Swami read the letter, and Brother Satyajit came out and he told me, these are Swami's instructions. You know, I could not hide my reaction. The moment I heard that, as like, this is totally counterintuitive, you know, as like, and he could see that, that confusion on my face. And Swami would never reveal to him, like, what it was, the contents of the letter. All he would say, these are the instructions, very cryptic.
Right.
Right. So, he said, I don't know what the circumstances, but let me tell you this much, that very often times Swami gives you a choice between the world and himself. Right. And right now I can see that confusion on your face.
Mm.
And he said, in my experience, let me tell you one thing. If you keep choosing Swami, you will always be safe. You know, he said, whatever, however attractive the world looks and that option looks, but keep choosing Swami, no matter what it is.
Mm.
So that is something that has always stuck in my mind, to keep choosing God. Right. And this is precisely what, you know, is so many different ways. And Swami would always hold out that choice in front of us. Very simple, as you put it, like breakfast or darshan. Very simple. Do you want breakfast or do you want to have close physical darshan of the Lord? So many different ways. And as you said, it becomes ingrained, that habit, right, of mentally choosing God each time.
Right. And going back to one of the points that you're making about acquiring and then sharing, and what Swami was telling about the society, I was reminded of something which I had read sometime back. It was actually relating to anthropology, where they were saying, you know, in the early, I think, the early Homo sapien,
right,
they were saying that it was, I mean, that being was one of the most inadequate to live in the wild, right, compared to the other mammals,
right,
because you didn't have strong claws, you didn't have powerful jaws, and you had no ability to defend yourself.
One of the weakest,
right, one of the weakest mammals
in the forest,
in the wild. And they said that it was that which led this species to form communities and live in society. And you know, that was the first motivation, because when they lived in groups, they became so very powerful, right? And the next thing which was spoken about in that documentary was, you know, they were saying that no other being, I mean, no other species in that period had the ability to share learning like the Homo sapiens had.
Yes.
Anything, you know, be it making fire or making objects which float on water, or the ability to grow its own food, all of this, the way the human community shared amongst themselves, that could not be replicated even by the closest mammal, probably the chimpanzees or the orangutans. And that is where the difference came. And even if you look at it later, there was this, the example is, you know, post 1800 and post 1900, the kind of scientific progress which we saw is directly related to the boom in the communication industry.
Exactly.
I mean, in the field of communication.
Yes.
Because as the communication increased, the sharing was more prompt. And, you know, what was being done in Germany was immediately shared with somebody who was working in Japan or something like that. And the ability to share learning is literally the central reason why, as a species, we have grown so fast. And that's precisely what Swami is saying, that, I mean, from an animal state, you've come to the human state because of this ability for you to learn and share. And it's the same ability which is going to take you from the human to the divine level too.
Right.
And as a society, you have to progress there.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. And, of course, after this, Swami goes into the rest of the Sikshavali. But the beautiful point which we'll probably have to leave with is this concept of Shreyas and Prayas. And in the Premavaini also, Swami makes a mention of that.
Yes.
He says
yes.
that, you know, I'm talking of a society which is different. And Swami was, in that, if I'm not wrong, Swami makes a reference to some of these saints and sages like Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Vivekananda and all of them. He says that even today, if you talk of somebody, you talk of them, right? See, societies which have passed, you might have had bad people who were famous, who were, you know, people looked up to them. But today when you look up to those people, the people whom you look up to are the people who stood out in their character.
Right.
So even in today's world where probably the value of character is diminishing, even today when you remember somebody, you remember them only for their character. And even if you remember a wrong character, it's because he's been misrepresented in history and he's been shown as a good man, so you remember him for his goodness.
Right.
So Swami was saying that a society will always, in fact, that is what Swami says in one of his discourses, that is why living within the bounds of the society will automatically make you lead a dharmic life.
Correct.
When Swami speaks about Sangha Niti, he says that because the society's nature is like that, it appreciates goodness in some level at least. Even in the worst society, goodness will be appreciated.
Yeah, in that sense you can appreciate and how much there is a debt of gratitude we owe to Bhagwan, because he's given us what is a Sati Sai organization.
Right.
Right. And it is like an oasis in the desert. Like even if you're living in a city, right, and this still is a Sati Sai center for you to go to. This I can imagine, say somebody in Mumbai, they have Dharma Kshetra to go to look forward to for the bhajans and the sessions of sharing from devotees, right? And there is always Prashanti Nilayam. Swami said it is the home for all devotees, and Swami has created that kind of safe spaces for us to go to and get recharged in this, because as he said, it is that kind of society which is very, very important. The like-minded people, it has its own effect, that when I see that if I am oriented a certain way, if I am oriented towards service, but my immediate surroundings are not conducive to that. And what fortune it is to be able to step into a Sati Sai center where everybody is talking about the same thing. How can we serve society?
Right.
I remember, when I was a student in my engineering college, somehow I was searching, where can I find a Sati Sai center so that I can, because I knew so much that Swami expected service, the seva out of devotees, for Swami that was the biggest offering. And I searched high and nigh, for a Sati Sai center very close to where I was studying. And luckily after I found it, I the amount of relief I felt. Mm-hmm. Because the very first day I enter, after the bhajans, the Samiti convener, he speaks about the activities that are, this is on a Thursday, and he speaks about the activities that are going to be taken up that very Saturday. I was so happy that prayer had at last been answered, but Swami really made me sweat for that, for that opportunity, yeah. Right? But we may not be able to immediately appreciate, the kind of facilities, the amenities in that sense that Swami has created in order for us to foster our own innate divinity.
Right. If peer pressure can pull you down, peer pressure can push you up too.
Sure.
And that's what good company does to you.
Yeah.
And I think probably we'll have to leave it there. We would love to play longer clips of Swami, but what else to say? 5 minutes of what Swami said has so much to speak about. I mean, it's not that we enjoy listening to our own voices, dear listeners, but it's so very profound. The number of points that Swami made in that small 5-minute clip, it really defines all of what we are going through in the world today. I mean, and so clearly that there's so many beautiful messages to take from that.
Right.
5-minute clip. So we'll do hope that we'll play a longer clip next time. But still, I think we will only be cutting down on the discussion, which can be endless on what Swami is saying.
Sure.
So that, dear listeners, we offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. Do join us again next week at 7:30 for the next episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. In a short while from now, Brother Bishu will join you for the last segment of the day in the Vahini Satsang. So do stay tuned. Jai Sai Ram.